This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment's Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. A mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible. Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters Wednesday, April 17th.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Thanks so much for being with us again. I read yet another horrible story about gang violence this morning. A 16-year-old from Fairfax, Virginia, was found dead in a remote area after being stabbed, they think, about 100 times by fellow members of the notorious gang MS-13. And five men have now been arrested in connection with that murder. It really breaks your heart to hear these kinds of stories about gang life, but it's also amazing when you hear a story about a gang member like the one you're going to hear today. We're going to talk about it with Casey Diaz, a native of El Salvador and a former gang leader who grew up on the mean streets of Los Angeles and who came to know the Lord in prison. He is now telling his story in the book, The Shot Caller, a Latino gangbanger's miraculous escape from a life of violence to a new life in Christ. Casey, it's great to welcome you here. How are you?
Very good. Thank you so much for having me on your show, Janet.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here. And I think your story is fascinating. So let's start a little bit at the beginning. You say you were, what, 2 years old when you came to the United States? So you don't remember being in El Salvador?
I don't remember being in El Salvador. Yeah, I came here when I was two. And so absolutely no, nothing, never been there as well.
Right. So you've just been in the United States most of your life. What was your family like? I know you had a bit of a tough relationship with your father.
Yeah, I guess I was a little blinded by what would take place in the future. But normal growing up, going outside, playing baseball and football and stuff like that. Except that in the home, there was a lot of violence that had to do with my father at that time.
Right. And I know he was abusive. You even tried to kill him, didn't you, when you were a little boy?
Yes, I did on several occasions growing up as well.
Yeah.
It was just a bad relationship. The drinking didn't help. As you grow older, you're able to defend your mom. And so... It was terrible growing up in this apartment.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. How did things develop when you grew up in a kind of a violent home and a sort of abusive home? You ended up entering the gang life. How did that take place? What was the story of how you went from being a little boy, seeing all of this in your home, to joining a gang and getting involved in a gang?
Well, in the 80s, the gang culture had just really came alive in Los Angeles, and it was really, really getting started on a heavy note. Eight years old, I believe, is when I witnessed a triple homicide right in the back of the alley of where we lived, and where I saw somebody gun down three people right before my eyes. So seeing that, and then getting introduced to the gang by a local gang member there, it was just. You don't have the support in your family, and then you have the streets that are actually embracing you. It becomes very easy to choose one from the other.
Yeah.
And for me, I got introduced to it at 11 years old, to this gang culture, and I just ran with it. And unfortunately, it cost me a lot of unnecessary. Time that was spent losing my entire youthfulness in juvenile halls, prison camps, and eventually in state prison.
That's right. What was it that appealed to you the most about gangs? Was it kind of the camaraderie that you felt you lacked at home? Would you say that was the greatest pull for you and why you really sort of went in that direction? Or was it that you liked the toughness of it? What was appealing to it about you, for you, I should say?
I think it was the validation. The sense of family that it kind of portrayed, and you're a young boy, and if you're not hearing your father telling you, hey, you're gonna make it, you're gonna be fruitful, you're gonna be someone in this life, and you go without that, you know, you're going to look for that validation somewhere else, yeah. or it's going to come and present itself to you. And that's what happened with me. I liked the family, what it looked like, the family unit within the gang. You know, you had parties, you had the drinking, you had all kinds of stuff that really elements that kind of look like family, and the loyalty within the gang culture. So that really attracted me very young. And, you know, I would find out later on that wasn't the case at all.
Right. When did you start to become involved in criminal acts? When, you know, you began, obviously, as an 11-year-old, you didn't start out doing anything heinous to the point that you would be imprisoned later on in your life. But how did it start? What was the progression of, now I've joined the gang, now I'm going to start doing some criminal things? How did it start and how did it progress?
Well, in this gang, in this particular gang, actually, it went on fifth gear really quick. My first stabbing was at 11 years old.
Wow.
The very moment that I got initiated in, I had to go and partake of a stabbing. And so that was my first taste of it. But, you know, prior to that, there was, you know, going into 7-Elevens and stealing candies. And, you know, it's just the wrong crowd to be around. And again, you know, my mom worked two jobs, and I wouldn't see her because she would leave 4 in the morning and wouldn't return until, you know, 10, 11 at night. And so the only time I got, you know, any kind of a time with her was on Sundays. And by that time, you know, you are who you hang out with. And the gang started consuming my thought, my actions, and everything else with it.
Right. Did she know that you were involved in a gang?
She did, and I think it's like it's very common in the Hispanic culture, you know, that they stay in denial of seeing their children become these gang members that they become violent and they become very dangerous.
Yeah,
and I think my mom was in deep denial, and then the other thing too is, you know, my father not helping. The situation was him, and he was drug dealing as well. So all this mixture was it just really it was an easy way to choose the gang culture over anything else.
Yeah, because she was busy. She was probably stressed out. So she never came to you and said, you need to get out of this gang. Did she ever talk to you about it when you were going through it, or was it just allowed to progress without much interaction?
It was allowed to progress without any interaction. I mean, you know, she was busy trying to put bread on our table and stay with the bills, the rent, and she would talk to me from time to time, but you know, I'd go in into juvenile halls, I'd spend a year there or 6 months, and then I'd get out, and I'd probably last about maybe, you know, 2-3 days, and then I would be locked up again. So I really didn't get to, after 11 years old, I didn't see my mom but a handful of times because I was very involved and in these juvenile hall lockups.
Right. How did that affect your education? Because clearly, if you're going in and out of juvenile hall, that's going to be very disruptive for your life and being able to make your way in the world. What did you think about school? Did you care about school or anything like that during that time period?
Initially, no. You know, I was kicked out of so many LAUSD schools, beginning in junior high. What we call now middle school. And so I went to, I want to say maybe 6 or 8 junior high schools and a handful of high schools. And again, I would only last until I get arrested. So, you know, it was just jumping all over the place in downtown. In fact, they had to ship me in one of the occasions. They shipped me out of Los Angeles and bused me to Canoga Park High School in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, wow.
And in there, I mean, I only lasted, I think, 40 minutes in a classroom, and then I was arrested. in on the school property.
Well, then we're going to get into more on this. The Shot Caller is the name of the book, and God certainly had a plan for you, Casey. We're going to get into that part of the story when we come back on Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
My business is at stake because the government told me I can't live out my faith in the workplace.
I was arrested for handing out the U.S. Constitution on my college campus.
A state law is forcing me to advertise for abortion.
I realize those statements sound unbelievable, but it's true. Our most fundamental freedoms are under attack, and these very attacks could happen in your business, school, or even where you volunteer. I'm asking you to give to the Freedom Fund right now to protect not only your freedom, but also the freedom of your children and grandchildren. Visit JanetMefford.com and click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner or call 800-636-4042. Your gift of $100 will help defend your freedom and provide the resources needed to fight critical court battles. Call 800-636-4042, 800-636-4042, or donate now at JanetMefford.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. We're glad to have you here. Also glad to have with us Casey Diaz. His book is called The Shot Caller, A Latino Gangbanger's Miraculous Escape from a Life of Violence to a New Life in Christ. Casey, you were sharing about your background as a kid in Los Angeles, the tough family situation you were in, joining the gang, going around, getting kicked out of school, getting put in juvenile hall and the arrests and all the rest. What was it that finally had you go to prison, New Folsom State Prison? I know you ended up there for second degree murder and some, 52 counts of robbery, something like that?
Yes. That's what, I was 16 years old and, when this happened, and it zapped my whole young life in these institutions. And, you progressively just get worse and worse in these institutions. It's very, very minimal rehabilitation in there. It's more, and it is what it is. I mean, you committed a crime out here, you deserve to be in there, and that's just period. There shouldn't be any tolerance for activity or lenience towards stuff like this. So again, I had absolutely no religious background at that time. I had no care for lying for or anything else. So in there, I just continued my criminal lifestyle and became someone that I regret becoming later on in my life.
Well, was there much of a gang culture inside prison? Because you hear about that a lot, that there are various gangs inside the prisons and people kind of end up in this gang or that gang. To what extent did that affect you when you were in prison?
In California, in the CDC, in the California Department of Corrections, there is a convict law that goes throughout the entire prison system in California. So You will have to join something, a organized crime in there. So there's nothing that you can do about it. you will have to partake of these decisions that are made by the hierarchy of these gangs. So whether, you know, if you're black, you're going to join the blacks. If you're Hispanic, you're going to join this part of the Hispanic group. And then there's divisions in between of all of that. And so going in there, you hear all these stories, and this is time to really man up, and you got to survive in there. And whatever that means, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, you
and
do.
So for me, you know, violence was so big with me and so easy for me that in a sick way, it helped me to become one of the shot callers in there.
Right. So how was it? I know you ended up in solitary confinement and you had, you know, your moments in prison that were just horrific. How was it that the Lord ended up getting a hold of you? Can you tell us that story?
Sure. It was by a lady by the name of Frances. And this little lady would come with her little Bible study group from her church. It was a small church. It wasn't some mega church. It was just a small church making a difference. And, you know, she came in there initially and into solitary. And I remember the first time that she came in there and addressed me, you know, she asked for permission from the guard to approach my cell. And it was that initial moment that she said, I'm going to pray for you. And I, again, I didn't want anything to do with anything that was religious. I wasn't aware of Jesus, the Bible, or anything like that, or even Christianity. It just wasn't part of my life.
Yeah.
And when she invited me to this Bible study in solitary confinement, I thought, well, this lady's crazy. She's nuts. You know, inviting me to a Bible study. Does she know who I am and where she's at? So I didn't, you know, I wasn't disrespectful to her. I thought these things in my mind. And again, I just didn't want anything to do with it. I let her know that. But her zeal, her courage, her boldness, and her faith. I mean, she just said, you know, I'm gonna pray for you, and Jesus is gonna use you. And a year and some change later, she continued to stop by every this church would only come here to the solitary confinement place once a month. So the visit's very, very short. And she always made it a point to stop by my cell and let me know that she was praying for me and that Jesus would use me. And lo and behold, I had an experience in there in which I talk about in full detail right. in the book that just changes the course of my life at that moment.
Yeah. So wasn't it that you saw your life kind of play out in your cell? This was interesting how this happened, how you really, the Lord really kind of got you and grabbed you, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, I even when I share my testimony with in places and stuff, I always let everybody know, you know, God, when he wants to get a hold of you, he will get a hold of you.
Yes.
And you know, and he'll come eye level to you, and that's what happened with me. He really became so real in that moment in my cell that there was no denying what had just taken place in my heart and in that cell. So you know, I never prayed before. Nobody had ever taught me how to pray, but I just knew that what I just saw and what just took place in my cell was absolutely 100% real. And that led to my life being required of me for stepping down from this leadership in this organization.
That's amazing. So what was it about the gospel that grabbed you? The fact that you were loved, the fact that Christ would go to the cross for you, the fact that you could be forgiven. What was the thing that really pulled at you? All of those things, I imagine, to some extent. But what do you remember about that experience of finally understanding what the Lord had done for you?
Well, at the age of 8 or 9, I remember my first name is Darwin, and that's my birth name. I didn't like the name. Had no idea about what it meant or anything like that. I was just a kid. But I didn't like my name, and I remember getting a bunch of the kids from the neighborhood in the middle of a baseball game, and or right before the game started, and I told everybody, I said, from now on, you're going to call me Casey. And everybody kind of looked at each other like, what? You know, there's 15 kids playing baseball. What's this about, right? And so I did that. I don't know where I got that name from. But ever since that day, my mom, everybody, my family, everybody called me Casey. So I'm in the cell, and it's that moment that I see him on the cross, and I can hear Jesus telling me, Darwin, I did this for you, and I heard his breath being taken out of his body. Like, he's lost his life.
Goodness.
And I could hear the actual sound very loud in my cell, and that's what made it so real and unique to me, that here's, this is real love. This is someone that died for me.
Yep.
And immediately I knew in my spirit, in my heart, that, you know, it wasn't that I had did wrong in my life. It's that I had sinned before a holy God.
Yeah.
And that made the difference in my life. And I remember hitting my the floor on my knees, and I repented. And I remember telling God, you know, if this is you, you know, I'm sorry for, and I got very raw and real with him. And some events happened right afterwards.
Yeah. What was Francis's reaction, your Bible study friend there in the prison, when you told her?
When she found out, I think she was just in shock. You know, I think that so many of us, even now, you know, we underestimate the power of prayer and intercession that we have available in us because of Jesus, you know. And I think it's underestimated, and it's so needful and so powerful that we can go to a loving Father, to a loving God, and pray for anybody.
Yes.
To come to Christ. And man, when that's the desire of your heart, He'll change people. And I'm that product of intercessory prayer through this little lady by the name of Frances Parker.
Oh, that's so neat. And the fact that she just was from this little church, and she just was going in and sharing the love of God and sharing the word of God with prisoners, and probably had no idea what the Lord was going to do on that particular day. Casey, what would you say about your life since you came to know the Lord, and what the Lord has taught you, and what he has really done to impact your understanding of your former life?
Oh man, there's so many things that I've learned so far. You know, I've been a Christian for a long time now. One of the things is that God can do miracles, that he can really save the lost. I mean, he has, that's what he came to do. And, no one is, you know, his blood, covers everything. And I mean everything. And, you know, sometimes we think that, you know, a crime or a habit, and we go, oh, that person is, there's no way that person will ever come to Christ. And I think that we're so wrong in that, because, you know, here I am, you know, 20, almost on my third decade, and God did this for me and has changed my life. You know, after, me becoming born again and my life being required of me for stepping down as a shot caller there, you know, over 200 inmates would become Christians after that.
Amazing.
And many of them were shot callers of one of them in particular, one of the founders of MS-13. So, you know, here's what the gospel is so real. And I've learned that, you know, that the Bible is real. It's relevant today. It'll always be relevant. And that's really all we needed. We need Christ, we need his word, and that's what makes the difference in people's lives.
Oh, Casey, I couldn't have said it any better than that. And people have got to read your book. It's called The Shot Caller. Casey Diaz with us. Casey, so good to talk to you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Janet, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Oh, pleasure for me to have you too. God bless you. And we'll be back right after this. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment's Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. A mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible. Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, in theaters Wednesday, April 17th. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Boy, it really is a terrible thing to watch, the aftermath of the Notre Dame fire. And I guess you're not even allowed to have an opinion about it. It's amazing to me. Don't you put pundits on shows, TV shows in particular, to offer opinions on particular things? I guess not, because when you look at all of the social media firestorm, anybody who wandered off into any speculation, even if they didn't get into full-blown speculation about what caused the Notre Dame Cathedral fire, or even talking about what has been going on in France in terms of the attacks on churches, you can't go there. You just can't talk about that. Why can't you talk about that? It's one thing if you get on TV and you start saying, I bet it was this particular Muslim group from this particular mosque. I bet it was this far left group that is located here in this particular city in France. Now, that's really doing a conspiracy theory because you have no idea. You're just randomly pulling people out and accusing them of a crime without any evidence. And that is very irresponsible. But I think generally speaking, people are pretty careful about not going into specifics about who they think might have been responsible for a crime, unless maybe you're on the left, in which case all bets are off. So if somebody does something at a Trump rally, they can immediately start linking it to the KKK. Who cares? You could just do that if you're on the left. But I guess if anybody is concerned that the Notre Dame Cathedral fire might in fact not have been a result of any sort of renovation mishap, and we don't yet know, you're not even allowed to say it. Now, I thought this was interesting. People have talked a lot about Shepard Smith's encounter with the French mayor who came on his show and was quickly shut down. I want to play this again because I think this is really important for people to listen to. Listen to this cut and tell me if you think he advanced any kind of actual conspiracy theory, because I'm not hearing it. Listen to cut four.
Well, I was close to the scene when it happened. And no, I left the place because we want to let people work around it. Everybody's really under shock now in France. I would tell you something. It's even if nobody died, I mean, it's like a 9/11. It's a French 9/11, you know, and it's a big shock. I mean, this church was there for more than 850 years. Even the Nazis didn't dare to destroy it. And you need to know that for the past years, we had churches desecrated each and every week in France, all over France. So, of course, you will hear the story about the political correctness, which will tell you that it's probably an accident.
Sir, we're not going to speculate here of the cause of something which we don't know. If you have observations... or you know something, we would love to hear it.
No, I'm just telling you something. What you need to be ready.
No, sir. We're not doing that here. Not now. Okay. Not on my watch.
Okay.
Felipe Carcente, okay. It's very good of you to be here.
I fail to see what conspiracy theory he was actually putting forth, because he didn't say the word Muslims. He didn't talk about a particular far left group, me maybe being partly responsible or fully responsible. He barely said anything, but he did talk about churches being attacked. So are you not allowed to talk about that? You just can't have an opinion. You can't link or connect any dots, even if you are being very, very careful to do so. Now, this was also interesting because also over on Fox, you had Neil Cavuto interviewing the president of the Catholic League, Bill Donahue. He also was kicked off the air. And, you know, this has to come from the corporate brass because these things usually begin there. Don't let anybody speculate. There probably was something like that. But this was the actual clip of Neil Cavuto kicking Bill Donahue off the air. Again, listen to this exchange. This is cut two.
Bill, we don't know what started this.
Well, if it is an accident, it's a monumental tragedy. But forgive me for being suspicious. Just last month, a 17th century church was set on fire in Paris. We've seen tabernacles knocked down. Crosses have been torn down. Statues have been smashed.
We don't know that. So if we can avoid what your suspicions might be.
I'm sorry. I mean, when I find out that the Eucharist is being destroyed and excrement is being smeared on crosses.
Wait a minute, Bill.
This is going on now.
We cannot make conjectures about this. So thank you very much. Bill, I'm sorry. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, first of all, Neil Cavuto was dead wrong. because this was a story that came out from Raymond Ibrahim over at Gatestone Institute, and he's been logging the attacks on Christians across the world at the hands of Islam for a long time. In fact, I put this story up on my Twitter feed a couple of days before the Notre Dame fire broke out, actually the day before, because it was April 14th that this story came out. And he details what's going on in Europe. He talks about what's been happening. The headline was European churches vandalized, defecated on, and torched every day. And that presumably was the stuff to which Bill Donahue was referring. Here is an example from this story. It says, in France, two churches are desecrated every day on average. According to PI News, a German news site, 1,063 attacks on Christian churches or symbols were registered in France in 2018. That is a 17% increase compared to the previous year when 878 attacks were registered, meaning that such attacks are only going from bad to worse. Among some of the recent desecrations in France, these were from February and March. Vandals plundered a church and used excrement to draw a cross there. I know it's awful. There was another church vandalized on three separate occasions in February. A 19th century statue of the Virgin Mary, regarded as irreparable, was completely pulverized, said a clergyman, and a hanging cross was thrown to the floor. Vandals desecrated and smashed crosses and statues at St. Alain Cathedral in Lavore and mangled the arms of a statue of a crucified Christ in a mocking manner. An altar cloth was burned. Arsonists torched the church of St. Sulpice in Paris soon after midday mass on Sunday, March 17th. So he's not making this up, Neil Cavuto. He's not making it up. He's not getting this out of nowhere. And there have been some convictions recently of even people who were planning attacks on Notre Dame Cathedral itself. So why can't you talk about this? Surely you can't go into any definitive declaration on who was responsible for the Notre Dame fire. That still needs to be investigated. But why in the world can't you bring up what I regard to be pretty relevant information? Here we are during Holy Week. It's coming up on Easter, and the Notre Dame Cathedral is on fire. I mean, of course people are going to go there. Why wouldn't they go there? That makes some sense. Seems to me that if you're going to do a thorough investigation of what actually caused the fire, the investigators will have to go there as well, because it makes sense. But in our you can't be Islamophobic world, you just can't say anything at all. Well, that's just dumb. Because when you can't say anything at all about anything that might offend a particular group of people or leftists, what have you, how in the world do you solve any crimes? How do you come to any conclusions on anything if you've already decided ahead of time it can't be these people who are guilty? That's not how it works. That's not how it works when you do an investigation of any type. Now, this was kind of interesting. This is Bill Donahue appearing on a radio show explaining his concerns were legit. This is Cut 3.
I got the phone call just before about 20 minutes before they wanted me on there. So we downloaded something. One of the guys got me this article, the very one you mentioned. So I took some examples of that. Now, I opened it up by saying it could be an accident. But if you have an environment, look, if this was white nationalist, don't you think they'd all be saying, I wonder if somebody's doing this with the Klan or whatever? But we have to be very protective of certain groups of terrorists. And all I'm saying is, I don't know that it's terrorism. How do I know? All I'm saying is that if you have a rash of churches being burned, statues being smashed, excrement being thrown on the crucifix, and the Eucharist being desecrated, am I not allowed at least to be suspicious?
No, you're not allowed to be suspicious. You're not allowed. That's the new norm. You're not allowed to even be suspicious, because that would be crazy. Actually, it's pretty sane to say we might want to look in this direction, but it doesn't mean that, in fact, anybody who was from the Islamic faith was behind the Notre Dame fire. We don't yet know. They're launching an investigation. We have the president of France vowing that they will rebuild and they want to do it within 5 years. Who knows how it will actually come down? But if you're going to figure out how it happened, you have to leave all your options open. And it was very interesting to me that yesterday afternoon, MSNBC falsely accused Fox News of promoting fake online claims that Islamic terrorism was responsible for the fire. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander, but that's all awful. It's crazy. Political correctness will kill the news every time. We're going to come back. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. Stay with us.
my business is at stake because the government told me I can't live out my faith in the workplace.
I was arrested for handing out the U.S. Constitution on my college campus.
A state law is forcing me to advertise for abortion.
I realize those statements sound unbelievable, but it's true. Our most fundamental freedoms are under attack, and these very attacks could happen in your business, school, or even where you volunteer. I'm asking you to give to the Freedom Fund right now to protect not only your freedom, but also the freedom of your children and grandchildren. Visit JanetMefford.com and click on the Alliance Defending Freedom banner or call 800-636-4042. Your gift of $100 will help defend your freedom and provide the resources needed to fight critical court battles. Call 800-636-4042, 800-636-4042, or donate now at JanetMefford.com.
This Easter, from 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment comes Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. When Joy Smith's son John falls through an icy Missouri lake, all hope seems lost. But a mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible.
Please, God, send your Holy Spirit to save my son.
Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. In theaters Wednesday, April 17th. Tickets and showtimes available at BreakthroughMovie.com.
If you're a medical professional, here's a way to move from success to even greater significance. Mercy Ships has an urgent need for pediatric registered nurses. You'll be joining dozens of volunteer medical professionals who've been blessed by the opportunity.
I think all nurses should do something like this. To serve the unserved is one of the most beautiful experiences.
Get more information by visiting mercyships.org/nurses. Mercy Ships, bringing hope and healing to the world's forgotten poor.
This hour of Janet Mefford Today brought to you by 20th Century Fox and Franklin Entertainment's Breakthrough, starring Chrissy Metz, based on a true story. A mother's belief in the power of prayer inspires her community to trust God to do the impossible. Breakthrough, rated PG, parental guidance suggested, now playing. All right, I want to get a little bit more into some of the recent comments by Pete Buttigieg. I have to say, I've been talking about this man for several weeks now, and I just think it's going to be a really long campaign. It's going to be a really long campaign because, as I said last week, I believe, this is my opinion, this is Obama 2.0. This is the chosen one. There's so many similarities between Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, as they like to fondly refer to him, and Barack Obama, that it's not even funny. And it, you know, we're just in a place in our society where things that really used to matter to the American people are now just no big deal, such as somebody's morals. Morals just don't matter. And I know we've had people yelling for the last 2 years about Donald Trump's morals. I don't know anybody who's voted for Donald Trump, especially Christians, who've said his morals are fantastic. I think there was a lot of reluctance on the part of a lot of Christians to vote for Donald Trump because of his morals and his moral past. But people were saying, we know what we would get with Hillary Clinton, and we can't exactly vote for her on account of her morals. So what are we to do? What are voters to do? Different scenario. But here we have Pete Buttigieg giving interview after interview after interview after interview. And he was on a Pence kick. I think he's going to be on a Pence kick until the election. But at any rate, now he's out there constantly talking about his faith, which is getting so old because this was a man who was, quote unquote, married to another man in an Episcopal church. Episcopalians are not even evangelicals, so the far left mainline, they're about as far left as you can possibly get. Many would say you're not even in the realm of Christianity anymore. They've gone so far afield of the Bible. But Pete Buttigieg was on CNN talking about his life and faith and religion and all of these themes that seem to be coming up quite frequently with him. Listen to Cut 5.
I think in the presidential process, people need to understand us for everything that we are, and that includes getting a glimpse into our souls. Now, I say this with caution because I also believe strongly in the separation of church and state. I believe that religion is never something to impose on somebody else, and I believe it's important that anybody in politics can equally represent people of any faith or people of no faith.
All right, but here's the problem with that. This is a man who obviously is of a gay activist ilk. He wants the Equality Act to pass. The Equality Act is basically a boot on the face of Christians because it would rip your religious freedom from you and force you to go along with the homosexual agenda. That's what the Equality Act is. He's all for it. So you can talk all day about the separation of church and state, but when the state is enacting or wanting to enact something as totalitarian and unconstitutional as the Equality Act, and this guy is fully on board with it, then don't make us laugh in a very ironic way, of course, because there's nothing funny about this. Oh, yes, religion is never something to impose on anybody else. How about gay rights? Should you oppose gay rights on everybody else? Because that's what it's all about. And I'm telling you guys, I'm telling you right now, there are already conservatives and those on the right who are talking about all the other issues. Well, we don't have to talk about his homosexuality. Let's talk about his bad progressive ideas. Well, you can do that all day, folks. But I'm telling you right now, in my opinion, it will be another Anise Parker. Remember Anise Parker, the former mayor of Houston? And she was the one who imposed the bathroom bill on the city of Houston. She was the one who said, it's about me. She's a lesbian. She's now head of the LGBTQ Victory Fund. And she told the people it was all about me. She didn't care what anybody in the city wanted. She was going to impose it because it's all about the activism. If you want that on a presidential scale, I guess you can vote for Mayor Pete because you're going to get the same thing because he's giving you every hint that that's exactly what it's going to be. Now, listen to this one. This is from his CNN interview. This is Cut 6.
What I know is that, first of all, my husband, Chasten, will be an amazing father. He's great professionally as well, but I can't wait to see him as a parent. I will be trying to live up to his example on that. I also know that it's another one of those experiences that I think, you know, the things that happen to you when you care for somebody more than for yourself. And I can just, knowing what that's like in our marriage, I can scarcely imagine what it's like as a parent, but I know that it would make me a better person, and I imagine it would make me a better president.
Might I point out here, you can't have a child with your male, quote unquote, husband who isn't your husband. I know we're using the terminology because there is no terminology for the union you're involved in that is legal in the United States, thanks to the Obergefell decision. You can't have babies with another man. You're going to have to take somebody else's baby and adopt that baby or hire a surrogate or whatever. You cannot have a baby. Because this is not a marriage. I don't care what they call it. It's not a real marriage. A marriage is between a man and a woman, and you can't have children. Now, listen to that in context with what he then went on to say about, once again, Vice President Mike Pence. This is Cut 7.
The vice president is entitled to his religious beliefs. My problem is when those religious beliefs are used as an excuse to harm other people. This isn't about him as a human being. This is about policies that hurt people. Policies that hurt children.
Okay, well, as long as we're on the subject, let's go back to something that was printed in 2016 in the Daily Wire, and this was the headline, study, : same-sex parenting hurts kids more than we think. You want to talk about harming children? We could talk about harming children. They mention in the article here, a new study on children raised by same-sex couples further confirms the findings of previous authoritative studies. The healthiest environment for a child is a home with a mother and a father. Those seeking to protect the stigmatized minority, quote unquote, of same-sex parents, the study's author suggests, may be letting ideology trump biology and placing the desires of adults above the health of children. Of course, the study conducted by sociology professor D. Paul Sullins of the Catholic University of America found that children raised by same-sex couples are far more likely to suffer depression than those raised by male-female parents and demonstrate a higher risk of suicide, imbalanced closeness, as they call it, child abuse, and self-esteem and obesity problems. Sullen's study, which used information from the nonpartisan National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health to track children raised by 20 same-sex couples over a period of 13 years, found that the problems with those raised in same-sex homes often began to surface in their 20s. He wrote, at age 28, the adults raised by same-sex parents were at over twice the risk of depression as people raised by man-woman parents. Sullen's also found an elevated risk associated with imbalanced closeness and parental child abuse in family of origin, depression, suicidality, and anxiety at age 15, and stigma and obesity in those raised in same-sex homes. I imagine CNN probably will not pose that question to him. We're not supposed to talk about it. We're not supposed to look at his brave new relationship and have any moral problem with it whatsoever. And I say, that's the main thing you should be concerned about because of the trajectory of big gay activism, folks. And we know what it's been doing to Christians. We know how Jack Phillips has suffered. We know how people like Baron L. Stutzman have suffered. The florist in Washington, Jack Phillips in Colorado. We've seen what's happened to Atlanta Fire Chief Calvin Cochran. He wrote a book that wasn't even tied to his job as the Atlanta Fire Chief, and he got canned because they didn't like that he said that homosexuality was wrong. This is where it's headed. And I'll tell you what, we are really excited right now to partner with Alliance Defending Freedom. We want to help them. They are doing fantastic work in the courts. As you know, with that recent Jack Phillips decision that took place last year, such an incredibly important decision. And there are more Christians in the pipeline. There are more all the time who are facing legal action because they believe in marriage between a man and a woman. And who could have ever predicted that in the United States of America, this would ever come to pass? But we're in some very uncharted waters. And we want to raise $7,500 to help Alliance Defending Freedom continue to help people like Jack Phillips and so many others who have their religious freedom violated and have the Constitution violated, trying to shut down religious liberty. And this is our fundamental freedom. What are we going to do if we lose our religious liberty? This is exactly why our forefathers, those who braved the waters to come over here and to have religious liberty, were all about. They wanted freedom to worship the Lord as the Lord commanded in his word. So your gift of $100 to Alliance Defending Freedom's Freedom Fund will help defend not just the freedom of people like Jack Phillips, but your own freedom, and provide the resources that are really needed right now to fight the critical court battles that affect all of us. So if you can give, we really would appreciate it. This is the number, 800-636-4042. 800-636-4042. That's 800-636-4042. There's also a banner to click at janetmefford.com, Alliance Defending Freedom. They do such fantastic work uniting attorneys and ministry leaders and pastors with this common purpose, a shared commitment to defending religious freedom as well as the sanctity of human life and marriage and family. They need your support. So if you can support them now, we would be so appreciative. 800-636-4042, or there is a banner to click, Alliance Defending Freedom, over at janetmefford.com. We've got to go. God bless you. We'll see you next time.